This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back. Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. Presented by Crop Metcalf, the other official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber? Visit CropMetcalf.com to join their team. I'm John Paul Flame, joined by Eric Bickle, John Auville, Jason Bishop. That is the foursome. Got J.P. Finley joining us at 7:20, covers the Washington football team. We'll talk some NFL with J.P. Finley. But joining us right now on the Mattress House Hotline, our pal Kevin McCarthy, entertainment reporter for Fox 5.
J.P.
Hey, Kevin.
Hello. Good morning, John Paul Flame. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Kevin.
Hey, buddy.
Someone was asking me on the Vibe Machine why you're not on Zoom anymore.
Yeah, why aren't you on
Zoom? I can do Zoom. The only problem with, so back when the pandemic started, I was in like my studio at home, like my basement area, with like a really cool movie view and like views of like my movie room. Now I'm in just some like random office, like where I have to be quiet because, you know, I'm at the newsroom, so I can't really.
Look at Cakes' background. Cakes looks like he's on a porn set.
All right, I promise you, I will give you Zoom the rest of the segments from now on. Just know it's just going to be a kind of a bland office. To be honest, but I'll do it next time.
That's
for sure.
Fine, it works.
I mean, I don't care either way. Yeah. I'm just telling you some of the listeners were asking.
Well, actually, to be honest with you, I do like seeing you guys. I mean, like when we first started doing these segments, you know, in 2005 up until, you know, recently, like a couple years, like I used to be in studio with you guys every week.
By the way, the best Halloween movie of all time is the original Halloween.
Oh, it's classic. I mean, it's
it's the original Halloween. It's the best of all time.
Yeah, the opening, the first Halloween movie, I agree hands down that when it comes to Halloween, it's no question the best Halloween movie. I mean, that movie, it's, I always loved that John Carpenter wrote that music, that piece of score that we hear from Michael Myers, the dun 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 dun. He's just it was just cool how that whole movie came together. It was super cheap, very innovative. And you know what's great about the original Halloween is that it was before all that like torture porn style of violence where like you know what I mean,
Cakes, it was more like psychological, like, it wasn't gore, it was more like, you know, the threat of Michael Myers, you know, stalking the,
yeah, where is he
else.
Right, where is he in the house, where is he in the town. I'll throw out, it's the greatest horror movie of all time. Not, I won't just isolate it to Halloween. I think it's the greatest horror movie of all time.
Now, I would argue with you on that only because I think there are better horror films, but I don't think you're wrong. It should be in the top five. Like, I would argue The Shining's a better horror film, but that's just because I love Kubrick, and I think that movie psychologically just messes me up even more than, than Halloween.
That's good.
But I will say this about the original Halloween. You know, going back to that idea, like, you know, you look at all the films that we see today where, like, there's the body counts in these horror films now, it's just really more about the shock. I mean, like you were saying, it's the atmosphere of the first Halloween film. Do you guys, to me, the scariest part of that movie, besides the beginning, where it's like a one continuous shot as he walks in and, you know, through the house, he's, you know, I think that's the only time we ever see Michael's face, is like a young boy, right, at the end of that scene, right, I believe, Cakes. And so what's cool about that film is just how atmospheric it is. Do you remember the murder he does with the boyfriend downstairs where he puts him up against the wall with a knife?
Yes.
Of course. I've seen it 50 times. Of course I remember.
Yes, he's about four feet off the ground.
Right. The only reason I'm bringing that up, I know you guys know it, but do you remember what Michael Myers does in that scene after he kills him?
I I think I'm correct.
Yes, he puts the sheet on and walks into the room with the girlfriend.
He slams the butcher knife through his chest, and he's impaled on, like, the closet door. And then they go to a shot of Michael, and he just kind of tilts his head for a second and looks at you know, the guy he just killed, and then he moves on in the house. Yes.
Well, then he moves into the bedroom with the sheet on, because the girl is laying there naked waiting for the boyfriend to come back and pwn her.
Silly.
But he comes in and pwns.
What movie is that?
That's Halloween.
Silly.
Halloween.
But I mean, seriously.
Cakes brought up the best part about that scene, or not the best part, but the creepiest part about that scene is Michael Myers' head tilt. Like when he tilts his head and he's almost like admiring his kill, it's very dark. And it's such a random little thing that the character does or the actor does inside the mask. But yeah, so that is hands down. I was also going to give some underrated horror films today. I don't know if you guys saw the Borat movie. I reviewed it last week, yes. But there's so much news that came out of that. I don't know if you guys saw all the different stories, how he filmed it, the GoFundMe accounts that were created for some of the people who were involved in the film. There are so many cool things that kind of came out of that.
Well, didn't he use a couple, like, sort of regular people and pay him nubs?
Okay, so I'm so happy you asked that. All right, so the Borat films, filmmaking-wise, are incredible. There's no actors in those movies. It's just Sacha Baron Cohen and Maria Bakalova, who plays the daughter. Those are your actors. Everybody else, for the most part, is a real person. So much so that when Maria Bakalova auditioned for the role, they had her audition in a real bit, in a real moment. So the way Borat pulls off these bits is that he basically goes around with a crew, and they explain that they're filming like a documentary for a foreign country so they can show American culture and how American culture is integrated and things like that. So all these people that you're seeing in these Borat films are signing releases thinking that they are in a documentary. They think they're just in a documentary that's going to be seen by another country that shows our culture. That's why they catch people off guard so much, and that's how they legally get away with it. So, for example, Eric, the person you're referring to, there's a woman in the movie who becomes a babysitter for Borat's character, Borat's character's daughter, Tutar. She's a 15-year-old character. She's also the character that's eventually in the Rudy Giuliani scene. She's not 15 in real life, but the character's 15. But the person you're referring to, Eric, got paid $3,600. She was sought out by the filmmaking crew to be in this documentary and babysit the character and kind of learn and show that part of the culture, and American culture. So that lady had absolutely no idea she was in a Borat movie until last week. Right. And she was apparently genuinely concerned for the daughter in real life, knowing she was
very
playing
nice
a character.
And, yeah, she was really reaching out and trying to help her.
And I'll tell you this, so it's really cool how they do this. So Sacha Baron Cohen actually just donated $100,000 to her. A GoFundMe was created by her pastor at her church after she found out she was in the Borat movie. Like, she felt like not betrayed by Sacha Baron Cohen, but betrayed by the idea that it wasn't real. She genuinely was like trying to help this girl. And I think that's the beauty of the Borat movies, Cakes. And I think you would agree is that it shows humanity at a real angle. It's not like she wasn't playing
for
the camera.
I'm more in it for the laughs.
You're not worried about humanity.
Cakes is not looking for any deeper meaning in anything.
Yucks. Yeah, entertainment.
Yeah, we want duty humor.
See, I would argue that if you can get the humor you want and an important message out and like a portrayal of our country in a certain way, the two guys he lived with, the
Yucks
two conservative guys. So here's so you guys know the story behind this. So the country music festival sequence?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we just retweeted that at Junks Radio if you haven't seen it. I think you tweeted it recently, Kevin, right?
Yeah. So to set it up for people who might not have seen it, Borat dresses up as another character. Because Borat's famous from the 2006 film, he can't really go places without people knowing it's Borat or Sacha Baron Cohen, so he dresses up in different characters. The country music festival, he actually wore, this is based on an interview he did with Colbert, I think, he wore a bulletproof vest. And during the middle of the festival, somebody found out that it was Sacha Baron Cohen, and they stormed the stage, and he had to rush off and basically run for his life, essentially. I mean, these bits
looked like he was hiding in almost like a closet.
Like an ambulance or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he jumped in like a truck. I mean, that's the craziest part about these things. Like, the two guys he lived with, the two conservative guys he lived with, I think they were like the conspiracy theorists, mm-hmm. He lived with them for 5 days, And he would break character at night when he went in his room and, like, call his family and, like, things like that. But the guys he lived with did not know they were making a Borat film. Like, if you watch that film from the perspective of knowing how it's made, it makes it so much more enjoyable because you know what you're watching is real. For the CPAC scene, Cakes, he hid in the bathroom at CPAC for 5 hours before he interrupted Mike Pence's speech,
right,
just so that he could time it out and get in there on time. Like, it's insane filmmaking. It really is.
Now, the Pence scene, though, Pence didn't really go for it, right?
Well, you know, so it's funny. So one of our Fox 5 photographers, Ronnie, was actually there that day filming for CPAC. And anybody who was in that room just thought it was a guy dressed in a Trump costume who like, you know, was interrupting Mike Pence's speech. Again, nobody knew it was a Borat film. Right. So it's like all these things that happened, there were stories about them. But the stories were, oh, so-and-so did this, but no one knew it was a Borat movie. Obviously, the Giuliani scene, he knows it's Borat by the end. But again, the Giuliani scene is brilliant. They had to create a whole 24-year-old conservative reporter character for the daughter so that she could call the office and actually book a legitimate interview with Giuliani. I mean, it's all done. The pre-planning behind these movies is what makes these movies brilliant, in my opinion.
Hmm.
It's incredible.
All right.
I always favored Ali G over Borat, but the Borat movies are good.
But the Borat movies, and Cakes, I know you don't care about the deeper meanings and just kind of want to have more fun with it, but correct, at the end of the day, you have to understand why he's doing this. He's putting his life at risk so he can show and portray our country in a certain way. That movie kind of shows both sides. He plays with both sides. And I think what's cool
is... take a step back. He's doing it to make money. Okay, that's why Sacha Baron Cohen is doing it.
No, I mean, of course he is.
Yes,
I mean,
he's portraying a message, that's fine, but...
I think it's more brilliant than you think. I think he actually cares.
It's
brilliant. I actually think the Borat film is brilliant.
Hey, Valdez, thought it was brilliant, what his rating was. Ask Valdez how many crowd
balls. Oh, he thought it was great.
I gave it
Valdez hated it. I know
no,
he did.
No, I gave it a 2 out of 5. I think I laughed hard maybe 4 times. Was it the daughter scenes aren't that funny? Besides where they're dancing, it became a whole thing with him and the daughter.
I loved it.
I think it's iced. The first one blows it out of the water.
The first one's
more Borat, less daughter.
Different times, man. It's all about a timestamp of where we are in the country at the moment. We're in a different time at this moment. You know what I mean? It's a different form of comedy, I think.
Yeah, that's just funny form.
Okay.
Not as funny. I gave it 4 cake batters. I enjoyed it.
I loved it too.
All right, so any movies to sleep on that we sleep on or anything else interesting?
Yeah, so
because I'm getting ready to go to sleep.
I know you are. All right, so real quick, horror movies people sleep on, and I'm just going to run through 5 of these real fast. I know we have to go in 2 minutes, so the 5th one is The Mist. I know that.
Oh, I don't sleep on that.
That movie, that the ending of that
cheery
film,
ending.
That the ending might be the most shocking ending I've ever seen in a movie. I could not believe. So that's based on a Stephen King story, and Frank Darabont directed The Mist, who also directed Shawshank Redemption. The end of The Mist is one of the most shocking things I've ever seen, and it's not the ending King wrote, but King approves of it.
What's a better movie, The Mist or Quiet Place?
I like The Mist better.
I kind of like
it terrifies me with the giant spiders. I mean, it's going to leave a lasting mark.
Bunch of John Sallys.
Yeah.
You sleep on The Mist. All right, I also got to mention Dr. Sleep. This is the sequel to The Shining. It wasn't seen by a lot of people. It has Ewan McGregor. There's a scene in this movie that is arguably one of the most graphic and disturbing scenes I've ever seen in a movie, and it deals with Jacob Tremblay and Rebecca Ferguson. Highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. The Shining, it's a great companion piece to The Shining. I also want to recommend some of Sam Raimi's earlier films, The Evil Dead, The Evil Dead 2, and Army of Darkness. Those are great horror films, inventive camera work.
Those are zombie movies, right?
It's like a demon possession type of film, okay. Cabin in the Woods type of thing, and Bruce Campbell is absolutely brilliant. And then the last one I'll mention is Sinister. And I know I mentioned this on the show before, but this is Ethan Hawke.
Oh, I saw that with my daughter. Oh,
dude.
It is creepy.
Dude. I'm telling you right now. So a warning out there to people listening, there are 2 Sinister movies, Sinister and Sinister 2. Just watch the first Sinister. It's Ethan Hawke. They move into a house. They find 8mm videos of some of the most horrific violent acts you've ever seen. And then it starts to haunt the house. I believe there was a scientific experiment recently, Cakes, that proved that Sinister is the scariest movie of all time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think there was like a, they actually broke it down via science. And they were like, oh, this is why. That movie, I have never felt more unsettled in a film than watching Sinister. And then I also want to mention The Descent. The Descent is a horror film that takes place in a cave. Yeah. Jason, you've seen that movie with the girls, the women.
Good.
It's very, very well done.
It's not better than The Ring, though.
The Ring's very good. These are more underrated movies, but I think The Descent is great and Sinister is great. Anybody out there listening, just tweet me, Kevin McCarthy TV. I can tell you where to find some of these films if you need to.
All right, Kevin, appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Kevin. Right,
I love you guys and Papa Squeeze and JP and Papa Squeeze and Rick and CeCe.
Happy Halloween,
Kevin McCarthy. Coming up next, we're going to talk to Washington Football Team insider JP Finley from NBC Sports Washington on a Football Friday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back, Junkies on 106.7 The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. It's a Football Friday on The Fan. Should mention, though, we're also celebrating the one-year anniversary of the Nationals winning the World Series, which, of course, was a ton of fun last year during the run. We got to be part of the parade. It was fantastic. Starting at 6 p.m.
Oh, we're supposed
tonight.
To wear our rings.
Oh. Oh, yeah, I forgot. Did you guys get yours?
I'm going to get mine during the break.
All right, I'll get mine during the break as well. Yeah. Starting at 6 o'clock, you can listen to a rebroadcast of Game 7, and there's going to be special commentary between innings from the voices of the Washington Nationals, Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler.
Very cool.
So you want to tune in at 6 o'clock to relive that right here on 106.7 The Fan. All right, we wanted to get back to football on a Football Friday. Washington Football Team insider J.P. Finley joins us from NBC Sports Washington. What's up, J.P.?
Guys, what's going on? Thanks for having me this morning.
So, JP, I kind of hoard you with the tweet this morning because it made me laugh when I saw your partner, Pete Haley, had tweeted a video of you playing golf the other day. Can you fill us in on what happened? You basically said that you wanted to quit the game. If people haven't seen the video, again, you can follow us on Twitter, at Junks Radio. You're hitting it out of, I don't know, pine needles?
Yeah, so we for the bye week, we always do a trip, and obviously this year, you know, things are a little different. So we drove down to North Carolina and played a couple rounds of golf. There's some really famous old courses down there. It kind of in the Pinehurst area, but Pinehurst is junkie's money. So we played down the street at a course called Pine Needles.
Nice. That's hilarious.
That's great.
That's hilarious.
They're old, beautiful Donald Ross courses. I'm guessing Jason might know about them.
I've never played down there. I've never played in North Carolina. Besides Bald Head Island.
You should
Island.
Make that trip. It's only 5 hours, and it's a blast. You know, we were pretty – COVID has definitely impacted. Like, there's a lot of, like, kind of shared lounges and stuff, like big pool tables and card tables and stuff. All that stuff was closed. You kind of just sit outside and, you know, have a few cocktails. It was a blast. And I played some awful, awful golf, but Pete was significantly worse than me. I just want that to be known for the rest.
Yeah, I think in fairness, I think Pete put a video of himself struggling, right? Because I actually laughed at that. He swung like seven times at a ball. Was that Pete?
Yeah, I think
that,
yeah.
I posted that video of him only after I learned he posted that video of
right.
me.
Ah. See, you guys got to get rid of your phones on the golf course. You can't be taking video of each other exposing that. That's,
he wanted to do like an IG Live, and I was like, absolutely not.
No, no, I think you need to keep these videos coming. It's entertaining. It's
a tit for tat between you two. Would you tell us, like, so you played several rounds. What was the high score of the group and the low score of the group? Just to give us a range. You don't have to say anybody specifically.
I'll tell you specifically. B-Mitch shot a 79 one day, which is really good. He shot that at Mid-Pines, too, which is a really hard course. And Pete shot a 116. So there's your range.
By the way, does Pine has to be in the name of every course down there? I guess that's the bit.
Yeah, it's like a legal filing, I think.
Right. Oh, well, man. JP, I'm playing two just dog tracks next week. I don't know if you ever heard of a Pebble Beach and Spyglass. Just
why
a couple
you got
to
flex on JP like that?
Just a couple of just horrible courses.
What a rough trip that is.
Right, right.
Ask him how he's getting there, JP. Ask him how he's getting to California.
I'm guessing if it's Pebble and Spyglass, you got a PJ taking you out west.
Well, I'm very fortunate. Let's just say that. I won't be in the last row of a 747 United.
Finley, this is the amazing thing about Jason Bishop. This started with a text. It was a guy he met through our text machine.
Yep, the vibe machine.
I love it.
Thank God for it.
All right, so JP, go ahead.
No, just take advantage of everything you can get, man.
Absolutely.
To hang out with Jason. I'm sure.
Absolutely. All right, so JP, I saw you. You wrote an article, tweeted about sort of grading the Redskins or Washington's defense at this point, and I basically had no problem with what you said, even though JP was even throwing out some of these stats of where they are, you know, yardage wise and point wise. Overall, you can't give them better than a C-minus just based on giving up 30 points out of seven games, four times out of seven games, right?
That's where I'm at. And listen, I know that there were really some extenuating circumstances around giving up the points with turnovers and short fields and stuff, but the defense just hasn't been good enough. And I think people look at the Cowboys' performance, and it was dominant, and the second half against the Giants was dominant. But those are two bad teams. I mean, I think the Ravens probably could have dropped 45 if they kept Lamar in and were really pushing their foot to the gas. I think Arizona probably could have scored more in the second half. I think the defense has shown real signs. I think Montez Sweat's having a great year. I think Chase Young is a monster. Kendall Fuller's playing really well. But going into the season, I was worried about their linebackers. I was worried about the rest of that secondary. I think those fears are very legitimate. I think this team's missing Matt Ioannidis more than really any of us expected. He's their best interior pass rusher for sure. And just, I think Tim Settle's playing pretty well, but you like to have good depth there. I think the defense is playing better than the offense, certainly, but I look at the stats and I think they're fourth in yards allowed and 11th in scoring, and that's pretty good.
Yes,
but I think the Cowboys game skews that a ton, honestly.
Well, also, I mean, they were giving up short fields, so that's one reason why the yardage numbers are so favorable.
Yeah, but that's really in one game.
It's happened
maybe
several
two
times. And then the other thing is that you point out is that we thought this would be a great pass-rushing team, and they do have 22 sacks, but 14 of them are in two games against teams where their offensive line was just battered and they're playing third-string guys. That's what's been disappointing to me is that it hasn't been consistent.
And I think the sack numbers could improve because they've already played Lamar and Kyler, and those are two guys that are really elusive and kind of different offenses. I'm curious where this defense is in a month because – you got the Giants and the Cowboys again. I mean, the Cowboys could be starting Ben DiNucci for all we know. We'll see. But, you know, the Lions could score a little bit. Joe Burrow is going to run around and throw the ball downfield, but he's getting sacked a bunch. So I think, you know, I always listen to Rizzo when he comes on with you guys. And one of the smartest things I think Mike Rizzo always talks about is the back of the baseball card. Like, you got to remember that it's a long year and that the numbers tend to kind of stabilize over the course of the year. Mm-hmm. So if we get another month from now and the Washington defense is still floating around, 10th in yards, 8th in points, something like that, then I think the grade goes way up if you see, you know, because to JP's point, the really short fields were only awful in that Cleveland game, right, where Dwayne had the four turnovers. And then Kyle, to some extent, in the Giants game where he had the two turnovers. But against the Rams, the offense was so bad that the defense was getting beat up. They were on the field almost the whole day. So I think with the offenses – listen, I don't think Kyle Allen's a world beater, but it's undeniable that that offense is moving the ball better with him in there than they were with Dwayne. I think that gives them a chance to play some complimentary football, to even out the time of possession or even win that battle. As long as Kyle doesn't turn it over, I think it gives them a chance to really show that the defense can improve. I don't know what's going to happen with the Landon Collins injury now, because you're talking about Shazier Everett, Cam Curl, and then I think you'll see more of Kendall Fuller at safety in the second half of the year if they think they have to have him, especially in like a dime package. And Fuller has been lights out good. Mm-hmm.
JP, I don't know what your take on this is. You watch them every down. You talk to the coaches. But talking to Logan Paulson on the pregame show, he mentioned this before this past game, that the schematics of the offenses they faced the previous two games had kind of taken away the strength of the defense, meaning they were running a lot of rollouts. If you go back to Jared Goff in the Rams game, and they were running certain routes that kind of negated what the strength of the Washington defense is, which is the defensive line. And I said, well, then how does Washington counter that? And he said, well, you attack and you blitz more. And that's what we saw with Holcomb this week. And my guess is we're going to see more of that moving forward, which would generate more pass rush.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think you try to disguise stuff. And, I mean, to, like, simplify it, think back to those old Steeler defenses that kind of invented and popularized the zone blitz. And I think we saw that. I have to go back and check, but didn't Chase or Montez back off on the Holcomb blitz? Like, they disguised it, and then Holcomb came up, blew up Zeke. I know that they tried to just get a little bit more exotic. And the other part of this, that Jack Del Rio, I thought, did a really awesome job of talking about Chase Young's impact. And he mentioned specifically that Jonathan Allen got a sack, Montez Sweat got a sack, because these offenses have to completely shift what they're doing to try to stop Chase Young. And Del Rio said that Young is really being kind of selfless by taking on this workload that is freeing up other guys. And I think you'll see more of that, where they designed to overload one side maybe next to Chase because they know he's going to get doubled or chipped or keep a tight end in or whatever the offense tries to do.
Joined by JP Finley, NBC Sports Washington. Let's pivot over to the offense now. Gibby has become the workhorse back. He's got 52 more carries than McKissick. He also has 19 grabs through seven games. Are we going to see the same sort of treatment for him touch-wise coming out of the bye?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't even be shocked if it increases. I mean, he got way more touches against Dallas, and it's been a fairly steady increase. I think there's a lot to like with him. I think he's kind of just on the surface level of what he can be in the NFL. I think he can learn to be a much better and more patient runner. And I think he can run more routes than maybe we've seen, kind of getting downfield on wheels and seams. It doesn't all have to be kind of at the line of scrimmage. But I think if they can add more verticality to their offense in general, it's going to help. The deep shot to Terry against Dallas really helped open things up. And even Logan Thomas, for as much, you know, angst that the tight end position created, he's slowly on par to deliver a pretty decent season. I mean, tight end, there's only a couple of George Kittle, Travis Kelce types out there. And I think Logan Thomas is probably on track to get about 40 catches, you know, 400 or 500 yards, 5 or 6 touchdowns. And I think if you can add it.
They're solid. Thrilled with that.
Yeah. Very solid
from him.
Totally. And I think what we saw against Dallas was he was able to get open downfield a bit. Now, he's never going to be a yards after catch guy, any of that stuff. He just doesn't have that high-end speed. But if he can make 18, 22-yard catches, that opens a lot of things up.
I know Eric is feeling good about the Giant game coming out of the bye.
Well, I mean, you got a great shot to
beat him. Especially, and you also have to feel good about this. The Giants are going to come off a short week because the Giants are playing Monday night against Tampa. All right, it's going to be a physical game for them. So I would say Washington's probably going to be favored by 3 coming out. That's my guess. But it's a short week for the Giants, so advantage
we
Washington.
We host that game too, right?
Yes, yeah. Here.
Washington hosts that game, and it'll be the first one with some fans.
Yeah, they're saying like 3,500 fans, I think, will be there. Jason, we actually got a guy from PointsBet, which is one of these online, you know, betting places, to come on our podcast and give us lines for every game the rest of the season.
What did he predict
on
that?
It was 3, Washington -3. And we also got so they have 9 games left.
I should be an odds maker. I mean, I should just go into another line of work.
So I got 3 out of the 9 games I nailed on the number.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of like guessed them before he gave us the line. But we also asked for an updated win total of the last 9 games.
Yeah.
And they set it at 3.5. Mm-hmm. So I really think the winner of this division is going to be 6 wins. And I think Philly having that tie could really work. I mean,
I know,
6-9-1, I could see winning this thing. Yeah. But I think we're on a track, and this will sound so absurd, but I could see week 17, Washington at Philly, being a win and in game.
Yep.
Oh, we've talked about that a lot, JP.
No doubt. No
it's crazy.
Doubt.
Doesn't 2 wins, like on a normal season, JP, and you're covering the team, when you're 2-5, it feels like a lost season. But this year's 2-5 feels like 4-3.
Not just that, but they are a 2-point conversion away from being 3-4 and being sole first place.
Of course. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Or you kick the extra point there, and then you might have a tie in your pocket too. Who knows? I mean, you can always run it back. And
here's a question for you, JP. Will they, with the deadline approaching, you know, I don't know if they'll be able to unload Haskins. I saw the stat where a first-round quarterback hasn't been unloaded between 2010 and 2019. Just hasn't happened in their rookie contract. But will they be buyers
Rosen
at all?
Did.
So
Rosen?
Who?
Wasn't Rosen?
I mean, they traded. Yeah, Josh Rosen was traded, you know.
Right, yeah, that might be.
That was his rookie contract.
Yeah, that might be. Yeah. They might have overlooked that when I saw that stat. But here's the question. Will they be buyers at all? Will they upgrade at receiver or somewhere on the team other than, you know, maybe dumping Haskins?
I don't know that they will be, Eric, and I would say they shouldn't be. I think, listen, I get where Ron is now, that they're competing. They're a half game out of first place at the midpoint. Like, you should compete for that division title. I understand that. But I wouldn't give away assets towards your long-term rebuild to chase a 7-9 wild card.
I agree
with
that.
I think it's one thing. Honestly, I still think they should be selling. I think if you're not going to play Kerrigan, let him go somewhere he can play and try to get something
back. Would he want to go? Because I wondered about that. He seems like such a loyal guy. I wonder if he'd even want to go.
Part of me thinks he wouldn't. He loves it here. And when he says that, he's being honest.
Yeah.
You know, he's got 2 little ones, and I don't know that answer. I know that if I had to guess, he would like to play more. So if he can go to just think about the injuries to the Niners. If they could pick up Kerrigan for a 5th, and there's familiarity with Kyle Shanahan. I mean, he was here when he was drafted. I don't know that that'll happen. I actually have a story coming out here in a few minutes. I think the Haskins, you know, Haskins camp asking for a trade stuff got blown up way more than what was actually reported. But if that stuff's starting to come out, I think you got to try to move him. I think you take, you know, a quarter on the dollar and just how obvious is it that he's not going to play here?
Oh,
this thing's
God,
not going to work out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they'd rather play 36-year-old Alex Smith on a surgically repaired leg than a guy that threw for 50 touchdowns at Ohio State 2 seasons ago.
Yeah.
So I just think Ron has been decisive with Quentin Dunbar. He's been decisive with Trent Williams. This situation isn't those, but it seems to me headed on that track. And if there's one thing we all really, really, you know, clown Bruce Allen for, was allowing these bad situations to linger. And I can't imagine Ron wants to deal with that if he's working on this cultural rebuild.
Yeah. JP, great stuff as always. It's JP Finley from NBC Sports Washington.
Keep us updated.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Enjoy Pebble, man. I'm jealous.
Yeah, bro. I'll make sure I put it on the IG, all the videos.
There you go. You played both those places last time, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. The one you got to try to get on is Cyprus, right? That's the one that's impossible to get on.
Yeah, we tried. I had an in with a member at one of the clubs here who called over there, and it just didn't work out. That's like getting on Augusta.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way, JP said B. Mitch shot a 79. He is a baller. I think I've seen him. He crushes the ball, right?
Oh, yeah, he pounds it.
He plays a lot of golf.
I've never played with him, but I know he pounds it.
Yeah. He also pounds drinks during his round, too.
I love B. Mitch.
Hey, man, that's why we like him.
The guy works hard and plays hard.
Yeah. Well, that's the way to do it.
All right, coming up next, we're going to go around the NFL with the Junkies Blitz. We do it every morning at 7:45, including the top five matchups of the weekend here on the Junkies. Welcome back, Junkies All 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington on a football Friday. Got a lot going on the show. John Feinstein, bestselling author, he will jump on at 8 o'clock. We gave you our fatties at 6:45. At 9:45, Stucky from the Action Network, professional handicapper, he'll join us to give us his winners. But we mentioned this in the last segment.
And by the way, remember, JP, that Nubs Doug is releasing his game of the year, and I'll drop that in the 9 o'clock hour, maybe right before Stucky comes on.
Okay. I forgot about Nubs Doug. Sorry, right. I didn't have that one.
And he's putting $30,000 on the game.
Yeah, I didn't have that in my personal show lineup, Nubs Doug.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, it's Trapp's best friend, so I wanted to make sure I put it in.
Yes, he needs
they
to
did golf together.
I've never been so excited for a tease. I can't wait.
But I mentioned that it's a big day here on 106.7 The Fan. We are celebrating, look, it was a different year. Couldn't celebrate at Nationals Park the fact that they won the World Series and raised the banner, but we're going to do it. It's the one-year anniversary of the Nationals winning the World Series, and the one-year anniversary celebration on The Fan is going to be brought to you by Paul Henry's Window Installation. Save 10% on windows and doors in October. Contact paulhenryswindows.com for details. And as I mentioned in the last segment, 6 o'clock, you can listen to Game 7 all over again. Listen to all the tension, all the drama between innings. You're going to hear from Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler, the voices of the Washington Nationals. So it's a big deal. We talked about it at the top of the show. You know, it was one of those games, and they had many of them in the postseason, where there was just tension throughout the game. They fell behind. Zach Greinke was dominant. And then Rendon changed it with a home run, which brings it to 2-1. And then Soto's walked, and much like in the Tampa Dodgers World Series, a manager makes kind of a controversial decision, pulls the starter who had been dominant through seven innings. They pull Greinke out of there, and then, of course, Howie Kendrick hits the game-winning home run, and you see Corbin and Hudson just shut it down, and the Nationals win the World Series.
And, of course, what was so odd about that World Series was every home team lost.
That's right.
Yes.
All seven. And remember, when they came back here for games 3, 4, and 5, I was actually at game 3. It was a Friday night, October 25th. They lost the game 4-1, but their offense was completely dead. Remember, Eric? Remember how dead the Nats bats were? They scored a total of 3 runs in those 3 games at home. But in Houston, they scored, I think, 25 runs, something like that, in those 4 games. So it was just an awkward, weird, bizarre World Series because of that fact. Yes.
All right, Valdez, give me some NFL music. We're going to go around the NFL with the Junkies Blitz now. A couple stories before we get to the top five matchups. And one of them actually has to do with one of the matchups, which I did not put in the top five. It's just outside the top five. Pretty good game. Patriots quarterback Cam Newton called Sunday's road game against the Bills a must-win for the team. So he's putting more pressure on himself and the team. Patriots are 2-4. In the midst of a 3-game losing streak, which is their first since 2002. And, of course, they are trailing the Bills in the AFC East. Bills off to a 5-2 start.
This is the best opportunity for the Bills to really drive a stake through Belichick and the Patriots' heart if they can get the win this weekend.
And Josh Allen hadn't been great the last couple weeks after really playing well in the first four.
Yep.
So this is big for them, too. But you're right. If the Patriots lose this 2-5, they'll be three games back of the Bills. They're dead. So this is a huge game for New England.
We mentioned this earlier, that Julian Edelman, he's been dealing with a knee injury, and he may be out for what's arguably the worst collection of skill players in the NFL this season. So Cam may not even have Edelman.
Was it on our
Sunday
show? Yeah, it was Lockett 4 that was goofing on Edelman, right? Saying that it was over for him anyway.
Yeah, that advanced scouts who have looked at New England this year say that he's slowed down.
Now, he's got a knee injury, so that'll slow you down.
Right.
But let's see.
But he was still the most productive by far of the receivers there.
Right.
even being limited, he had 315 yards receiving through six games. Not great, but better than anybody else on the roster.
Wasn't Edelman the guy who was in bed with a chick after they won a Super Bowl, and then she whored him, like, after sex? She took a picture of him in bed together.
I can't remember.
It was just like a random chick.
I think that was him, yeah.
Oh, no, but he's had smoke shows of girlfriends, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's had, like, famous girlfriends.
But Belichick, and we talked about this yesterday with JLC, Belichick did a horrible job of assembling offensive talent around Cam. And Cam was a question mark. He just was. And the fact that they didn't go out and get better receivers, another tight end that could play, you know, upgrade the running back position. I mean, Rex Burkhead's like their starter.
Yeah. Burkhead's not bad.
I know, but I don't think that you're not afraid of him.
No. Could it just be a sneaky punt year? Where they're tanking for a draft choice?
I don't know.
The Patriots, because they had the most players opt out. Now, that's a personal choice that the players, I think they had like seven or eight guys, many starters, who decided not to play because of COVID. Maybe Belichick encouraged them and is tanking the year, and you know he wants to draft Trey Lance or something like that.
Well, I think you're right, because the report is that the front office said that everyone is tradable.
Yeah.
Gardner Minshew, quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars, apparently had x-rays this week, and he has multiple fractures and a strained ligament in his right thumb.
He's like, you cakes? Right-handed bowling?
That's right. Look at that.
It can't be good for a right-handed quarterback, right?
No.
So that may be an opportunity for Mike Glennon, his backup. There already was talk that they might go to Glennon anyway.
Right.
I don't think they are. I think they're going to go to Jake Luton, who they drafted.
Oh,
out of
really?
Oregon
I'm in a
State.
Super flex fantasy league with one drab T-shirt, and upon hearing the Minshew news, I'm a Minshew guy, so I scrambled and went and got Mike Glennon and added him to my roster. I've never been more ashamed.
All right, let me give you.
I'm not sure. I think they might go to Luton there.
Maybe they will.
Let me give you the top five matchups of the weekend. Now, this one is, I'm throwing it in there at number five simply because it's the battle in the NFC East. It's your Sunday night football game. The Dallas Cowboys head to Philly to take on the Eagles. Any chance that the Cowboys pull off a win here?
0%.
Do we know who's starting the quarterback for Dallas?
I don't think it's leaning towards DiNucci.
I think it's got to be DiNucci unless
Dalton clears
the concussion protocol.
At this point, it looks like it's going to be him.
Former Pitt Panther and JMU Duke.
Correct.
That's right.
I would say if DiNucci's playing, if you lose to DiNucci at home and that Cowboy defense, man, that's the worst loss of the year.
You've got the Saints and the Bears at 4:25. Saints, of course, 4-2. Bears, 5-2. Everybody believes they're fraudulent. The Rams take on Miami in Tua's first game. That's a 1:00 game.
By the way, getting back to the Bears for just a second, I would not be shocked at all to see Trubisky resurface, because ever since Foles came back, outside of him in relief in the Atlanta game, he's been dreadful. So I wouldn't be shocked if Trubisky gets another shot, crack at it.
49ers take on the Seahawks in a battle there in the NFC West. That's a 4:25 kick.
Man, that's a massive game.
Seattle coming off their first loss and biggest game of the week. That would be 1:00, the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Baltimore Ravens. Of course, I think Drab and Jason see that game differently. Jason likes Baltimore laying the points, and Drab like Pittsburgh catching the points.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the Seahawks game. I feel like they're going to bounce back after last week. I don't think Wilson's going to have three picks. They'll play better. Their defense is bad, but I think they'll – I don't know. I look for Seattle to rebound this week.
All right, coming up next, we do it every Friday at 8 o'clock. Best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein joins us here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.